side of the pond, he is DJ Schweitzer, looking different, and I am Jeremy Lance. I'm still here.
Is there something different about me today?
I don't know, Buzz. How you doing?
Yeah, I cut off all my hair. I got the old quarantine cut.
We were talking about this before we started recording about how, you know, that was kind of one of the first, like, industries to kind of get shut down by the government was hair salons and places where people would go get their haircut. So, like, you know, we're here in Ohio, but we're in week three of quarantine. Literally every day blends together.
I don't even know what day of the week it is anymore. I think this podcast is the only thing that really keeps me on track any longer.
This podcast and when trash deliver or trash pickup is, which was this morning. That's why I knew it was Monday.
Well, ours is normally on Friday mornings, and one of our neighbors, I swear, set their trash can out today full, and I just thought to myself, "Ooh, they have completely lost track of time."
Like, oh, they blew it.
Yeah,
they got it wrong. Yeah, luckily my neighbors are all older. So, like, taking the trash out was always, like, one of the only few things on their agenda. So, like, from that, as far as that goes, like, that hasn't changed for them. So, like, they're pretty punctual with it. They get it out there, like, by, like, mid-afternoon the day it needs to get out there. So,
yeah,
that's when I kind of get the tip off of, like, oh, guess I got to roll those out. But yeah, so hair stylists and hair salons and everything have been shut down. We're all dealing with it in our own way. I've convinced my son, who's in desperate need of a haircut, he's going to let me give him possibly a mohawk. I don't know. Well, I'll just get the clippers out and kind of just feel my way around and figure it out.
Yeah.
Worst comes to worst, we just go with the buzz, you know?
Well, I mean, that's not that I was trying to give myself a proper haircut beforehand. I've shaved my head a couple times before, and it's been probably a solid like 13 years since I actually took my hair all the way down like this. And
college,
I remember what I looked like that. It was just after college. And, you go in thinking that, but I was a little concerned like, oh, I know my hairline's creeping back a bit. And then you shave it all off and you go, oh, wow. Like, I actually am looking like an old man now. So,
you get to a better sense of where things are less full.
Yeah, I was thinking more David Beckham 2007 and ended up with way more of Arjen Robben from 2018.
Yeah.
As I said on Twitter, it's just a little sad to see where things actually stand. But, you know, it'll grow back and I can pretend that I've got hair still for a little bit longer at least.
Why don't you do like the old school and go Antonio Conte and just kind of have just let some hairs get long and kind of just wisp around.
There are some people who kind of call that the Donald Trump as well. So
you could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't know that I'm quite to the comb over stage in my hair decline at this point, but this has been an eye opening experience. But hey, without getting out to get a haircut, these are the things that we're forced to do. And, you know, it's better than doing another 10 questiony kind of memes on Reddit and Twitter and all the other places that everyone's sharing way too much information about themselves.
Every stream of social media has all gone into the gutter of just like what Facebook has become of just like, and it's like, and I've participated in it because it's like, what else? I mean, what, who cares at this point? We're just trying to get to that next day.
Yeah.
Like, how excited I get when I see that it's 5 p.m. and I'm like, oh, another day is almost over.
we're almost there. This Groundhog Day will hopefully end up a little bit different than the last one. But we are back again for, what is this, our third quarantine?
I have it on my notes as our third.
Okay.
Third COVID podcast.
This is our COVID three. And it's, if nothing else, we'll be able to use this to look back in time and measure where our sanity was once this thing all ends, presuming it all ends and this doesn't raise some sort of zombie apocalypse.
I feel like we would have seen that already in some other places. So I think we've made it. But I don't know. It's early. The night's young.
It is early. So as normal, we've got a top 10 list that we're going to get to, and we'll finish that after we actually talk about some of the headlines, some of the things we're doing to just entertain ourselves that are kind of soccer related out there. And I know you threw together a pretty interesting list as a way to at least kill some time while you're stuck in your house.
It's what we're all trying to do. Yeah. I don't know. Do you want to hit kind of some of the headlines here real quickly, or do you want to go with the kill time?
Let's do the kill time, because honestly, that's what people are doing right now. Even contemplating listening to us for an hour or so.
Like last week, I think we both kind of just muttered out a handful of things we had watched or we're pretty sure existed on the internet somewhere or some streaming platform.
True.
But I went ahead and Netflix has, I think everyone has a rough idea what's on Netflix. Like if you have Netflix, they do a pretty good job laying their stuff out. You know what's on there. If you have Hulu, that is not where you go for anything sports related. So nope. It's irrelevant in this conversation. But Amazon Prime has like a lot of things that I think people don't know about, mainly because their layout is not like their interface doesn't really lend itself to like giving you what you want to know.
Right.
So I did some digging and I picked out five great, they're all documentaries, Amazon documentaries, about soccer. Number five, it's called Iron Men, and it's a documentary series actually about the last season for West Ham before they moved to the new stadium.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, what was that, 2015, 2016, relatively recently?
Yeah, when they ditched their historic, lovable old ground, which probably needed some upgrades, and you could see them absolutely needing a new place to go, and going to the soulless, semi-converted from an Olympic stadium.
Taxpayer-funded.
Yeah, free rent, charging new West Ham stuff. I don't even know what the hell they're calling it. The London Stadium? It doesn't have a sponsor yet, right?
Olympic Stadium? London Stadium? I don't know.
I think it's a London Stadium.
It's funny how, and obviously the mood on that even here has changed a lot, but, it's such a big deal that it's, taxpayer-funded. Oh, obviously, yeah. Partially because it was taxpayers funding it for a different purpose, and then it was basically just given to West Ham. But, just the general concept of, taxpayer-funded stadiums. Like, over here, I don't know what, 80% of stadiums and arenas in the U.S. are taxpayer-funded in some way. I would say almost 100%, if not are funded, there is some sort of tax. Either you're getting tax money or there is a tax break or a loophole or something that you're getting, some kind of tax relief. So that's kind of pretty common here where, over there, everybody hates that stadium that's not a West Ham fan because they didn't want to pay for West Ham Stadium.
Well, luckily West Ham are squandering all that, and I'm sure they delve into bits and pieces of that whole process as well.
Yeah, so that's a good one. Number four is called 2 Billion Hearts, and that is actually, I think I even mentioned it last week that it was on YouTube, but Amazon Prime also has it, and in a lot of cases, you could probably get that in a higher quality, streaming as far as the video quality. The World Cup official films, and so this one is the 1994 World Cup film. It's called 2 Billion Hearts. They have all of them dating back to the 70s, which is where I think they actually started making these. Mm-hmm. But they're all on there.
I mean, that's reasonable.
Yeah, I think it was Saturday. I watched 94, 2010, and 2018.
Sounds like it was a productive day for you then.
Oh, absolutely. You know it.
All right. So that was number four.
Days are these days.
Oh, man. What is productivity anymore?
Number three, that it was a series, I think it came out a year ago, called This Is Football.
Mm-hmm.
Six-part series, really interesting. they kind of pick certain topics, and then just kind of how just the global game of football kind of bleeds into it and relates to it. And so there's different themes. The first episode is about a group of Liverpool supporters in Rwanda and how that group kind of helped, like the formation of that group kind of helped creating the unity post Rwanda genocide and all that stuff. And just kind of how these people in this, you know, remote country came together after this, you know, all this, you know, this war and unrest over this club that's, you know, not even, you know, way off in Liverpool, England. So that was really cool. There's another episode about kind of not like almost underdogs, but basically like when the thing that's supposed to happen doesn't happen. And one of the examples that they bring into it is the 2012 Champions League final,
which
Chelsea wins in Munich against Munich, where everyone thinks, of course, it's going to be Munich. They're much better team. And obviously Chelsea wins. And then they also bring in some of the other German clubs and kind of their history and, yeah, so just like a lot of cool episodes like that, and it all kind of just integrates these themes and kind of weaves them. Very well done. And I think it came out like maybe, yeah, just like a year ago, maybe last summer.
Okay, yeah, I think I've heard of it. Was there a bit at all about how Liverpool supporters in bars have influence over the matches?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there was. That they were upping the lads.
I'm glad that's been confirmed.
And then... And then Coutinho got that brace, and then it was great.
It really was. So
that, a couple years ago.
Okay.
Number two, the 4-year plan. I don't know if you've heard of this one. It's been out for a few years. It's from focuses, I think, around like 2007, when QPR was taken over.
Okay.
By new ownership. I don't want to say a nationality with, and then get it wrong and just be an idiot.
That's called racism.
Yes, I believe that's what that's referred to. So yeah. I'm going to sidestep that. But wealthy foreign investors take over the club. They have this whole plan. You get to see Neil Warnock be a complete knob the whole time. That's worth the price of admission. But yeah, it's about QPR's 4-year plan. Spoiler. Didn't go well.
Well, I'm in it for Warnock, if nothing else. All right.
Plenty of Warnock in that one.
So if Warnock doesn't get you to number one, who's your number one?
It was actually the one I mentioned last week. Take Us Home, the Leeds United documentary series. I actually rewatched like the first two episodes this past week. It is probably one of the best soccer documentaries out of it. Better than the Manchester City one that Amazon did. It's right up there with the Sunderland one. Better than the Juve one that Netflix did. I don't know the other ones. But, yeah, it's really good.
All right.
It's not as good as the one that Tottenham's about ready to release with Amazon, where we get to watch Pochettino get fired and Jose come in and take a dump over everything.
I don't need to relive this season. It's already torture enough.
So that'll be a good one. But yeah, those are just five really good. Again, like you're not going to just wander, like just come upon those. Those aren't going to be on like the home screen when you go look at like Prime Videos. Mm-hmm. You got to check for that stuff because the Prime Video library is so vast. So there's five things. I think Wednesday we get the second season of This Is Sunderland or Sunderland Till I Die.
Literally holding my breath.
I can't wait. I mean, it's no Tiger King, but...
I was just going to say, nothing will be quite that crazy, but Sunderland, given how things have transpired for them, are pretty close to it.
Who's the one football personality that you could plant into Tiger King and he would, like, blend into the... just the ethos, pretty good.
I mean, I'm glad you asked this. I spent time thinking about it and was like, oh, this would be a good one to just throw at Jeremy Cold. But the only name that really sprung to mind to me at all was Breck Shea.
Oh, my goodness. That's exactly what I was about to say.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, it's truly incredible. There's not the even another player that fits the mold even this close. And tell me Breck Shea doesn't own a tiger. If you showed up at Breck Shea's house with a camera, if he didn't have a tiger, I'd be disappointed.
Well, he's rocked the long blonde locks before, too, in a very Joe Exotic-like fashion. So
hasn't he had pictures taken with him?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. He's like one of those weird guys. He's one of those weird, like, artsy, Texans or whatever that, like, into, like, guns and stuff, but then will also sit there and, like, you know, paint, like, abstract painting for, like, you know, 3 weeks straight or something weird like that.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, like, keeping in that whole area, you know, like, he would be a very low-key character, but, like, you could kind of see Clint Dempsey just enjoying himself a little bit hanging out there, right?
Is it concerning?
He got that big pond. He can go fishing. He can fire off some guns.
Is it concerning that both of these guys are from Texas? Because I feel like, I mean, Oklahoma is just weirdo Texas.
Yeah, it's just, it's Texas is his leftovers.
It's incredible. Yeah, I could see Clint at least buying a ticket and sticking around for a few weeks before before he pisses off Breck and Breck fires him.
Man, that's so good that we both picked the same person.
Truly unplanned.
All right, let's get to some of the kind of news and notes.
I hate to even call this news because right now nothing's even remotely confirmed, but there are just rumor after rumor after rumor of solutions for how the Premier League are going to actually finish their league. And I'm sure other leagues are going through the same kind of process, but how they're going to get in these last 9 to 10 games. And there have been some really interesting, if not impractical, solutions tossed out there.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think you're right. Like, every federation, every league that's on the European calendar and that sticks with a traditional promotion and relegation format, like, it's imperative that they figure out a way to get a resolution.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have seen we've seen a situation already in England where the non-leagues have been basically they're just going to void out the season, which is being heavily fought against by the clubs themselves.
Yeah. I mean, there are some of these teams that are going from the bottom tiers into the professional ranks potentially. And that's a big, you know, ambitious move for them that they've been looking forward to and working towards. So,
well, yeah. And, you know, just like we see with clubs anywhere of that size, you try to make a run and you're really leveraging yourself a lot of times to do that financially.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, you look at a lower league side. I was thinking just the other day about, you know, how is this going to impact lower league soccer in America with this season that's cut short? You know, it's going to be a shortened season when we get back and going again. We've already had casualties. The NPSL has already had to say we can't have a season, which we saw coming. Like, you are a college developmental league. There is a tight, like, May to end of July window that your league has to happen in. And, like, there was just no way at this point that was going to work.
Yeah.
Like, they had no choice.
Think how many of those clubs are not going to come out of the backside of this because they're so reliant on the sponsorships that they draw in.
I mean, look at the USL. Like, even the USL that has done so well, the growth in the USL over the past, you know, 6-7 seasons. And even with all that growth, a lot of that growth are these new teams. And these new teams, just like any industry, like a startup business, are severely financially leveraged to get themselves off the ground and growing for that first couple seasons. And the USL has a handful of teams with a lot of promise, but are in that situation where they are heavily leveraged at the moment, just so that they could, you know, start up and have season one and season two and all that stuff. It's real concerning what happens with those guys.
Yeah, in the USL, I think their bigger concern is the reliance on ticket revenues and how big that is for so many of these clubs. Yeah. And, you know, putting 5,000 to 10,000 people in a park week in and week out is how you pay for the salaries to get good players there. Mm-hmm. And if you're not able to, you know, draw in, you know, even if they restart, if you're drawing in crowds of 1,000 or 2,000 as opposed to the 5 or 10 that you had beforehand, that is a drastic cut in your revenue. And really makes it so that these clubs are not as financially viable as they would have hoped to be. So I'm certain that we're going to see casualties in American soccer. It is undoubtedly going to cause them in Europe as well. But of course, we're going to talk about what's happening at the top end of the food chain, where for the most part, all of them should be fine. Although don't be surprised if this dips a couple clubs into administration, at least in England, both in the Championship. And I wouldn't be shocked in the Premier League either. But these are how they're going to finish the season, presuming we're able to actually do that. We're all secretly hoping that Liverpool will be denied success and they'll wipe the slate clean for them as well. One of them that I think is probably the most probable of weirdo solutions, provided they aren't able to play these in front of crowds, is the idea of them taking these games to like a training center. Think like St. James Park. Or not St. James Park, the English National Training Center, whose name is evading me all of a sudden, and having them play all these matches in one location back to back to back, or maybe a couple going simultaneously, so that they're able to use the same medical staff and the same refereeing crews and the same, you know, limited number of people to minimize exposure and not expose fans to themselves and to the players as well.
You had your wrong Saints there. You were St. George is what you were thinking of.
Yeah, that was what I'm
drawing a blank there. I mean, it's I've heard even like a lot of like the NBA is looking into this idea of like basically setting up the league. Just put it all in one area, keep everything confined, test everybody, you know, control the atmosphere, basically like insulate the whole league in one little area, and then play these matches, which would be, what a wild scenario as far as like, man, that'd make for a great like documentary series of like cameras falling around as you have the entirety of the EPL like having to be shoved into one area for like a couple weeks.
Think of all the relationships that would be, you know, guys would know each other from playing with each other in the past, or they're from the same country and they, you know, went to the same youth academies or whatever it might be, right? To me, I had some friends talking about it online. I think it was Adam Maloney and Browntown were both at it. They were talking about it'd be like the coolest youth tournament ever. And like, I want to stop by that tournament t-shirt sales spot so I can get one that's like, I was at the Premier League closed door, closed off season special. It seems really cool. And it does seem like something that actually could happen and a way to play it quickly so the teams aren't having to travel and there's not that kind of issue. Although, of course, you know, then you're forcing the players to be away from the comforts of home for 3-4 weeks at a time as well. So just lots of complexities that come with that. Don't forget about training as well that would have to happen along the way, too. So that's one interesting solution. Of course, one of the other ones they talked about that's probably fairly probable is if we're able to reconvene in stadiums again come the start of next season, actually compressing the end of this season into the start of next season and finishing the games in a, you know, 3-week session and then giving them like a week or two off and then starting up the new season and compressing that season a little bit as well.
So basically players like the your off season is the quarantine time.
Pretty much.
Which is great. Cause that means you're not going on vacation. You're not going home. Most of you that don't live in England, you're not going home.
Yeah. Although Jung Ming Sun just escaped South Korea.
Yeah, he's in the promised land. Things are going very good there. Like, can I come?
I know, right? I'll get my temperature taken, please, young men.
You can take my temperature 1,000 times if you need to. Just let me be. Let me in. Yeah. Just, I get the Eric Andre meme. Let me in.
Yeah, so that's one crazy proposal. But I think the craziest proposal, hands down, that I've heard is because it's been coronavirus new case free for 6 or 7 days, let's take all the Premier League games to Wuhan and play all the games there.
I mean, that's a move. That's a move.
It is a move. I don't know how practical or realistic that the truth are to those rumors, but it's just like no one knows how to solve these things right now. Like, so there's literally there's no solution.
In Wuhan, are you just using, because there is a Chinese Super League team in Wuhan. Mm. So you're just using their facility for everybody, or what?
Can't imagine that pitch would be able to take all those matches in quick succession.
I don't know how that would work, to kind of just have everybody there. I don't know what their training facility or their all their grounds or everything looks like. I'm attempting to pull up their information here for this team. Wuhan Zal FC.
Mm, powerhouse.
Oh, crushing it. Oh, I just saw 2 weeks ago, Wuhan football team is leaving Spain because the virus was getting too bad in Spain.
Yeah, so they're probably Wuhan doing some
off-season. Leave Spain.
Off-season training there is going disastrously. We need to come back.
We need to come back. Let us back in.
Let us come back.
Their stadium seats 30,000. I mean, it's no chump stadium.
People would flock from all over China to come watch it and restart the pandemic.
The Dong Kihu Sports Center.
Sure.
I'm in.
All right.
I mean, not literally. I don't think they'll allow me in, but I'm in.
All right. Let's do it. Let's end the news, because there's really what other news is there than to talk about Tiger King memes?
It's Tiger King memes, speculative nonsense of how leagues are going to recoup their billions of dollars.
Everyone's just trying to generate content. That's all it is at this point.
Yep. All right. So our list this week, every week we have done a list during these quarantine days. This week we asked for the player you love on the team you hate. It's a weird thing to kind of think about, but it definitely happens. There's definitely guys. Sometimes I think a lot of times it happens where you like them because they start not on a team you absolutely loathe, but then they get that big money contract and it's with a team you hate. Right. So like a bit of a fostered love. And then they go to this awful team, but you still love them enough that you're like, oh, I still love this player. The crazier ones, though, are the ones that, like, basically at all times are playing for the enemy, but you're like, I just can't not love how they play.
Yeah, it's a guilty pleasure, if you would.
Yeah, definitely.
And you never want to heap praise on a team that you hate or, you know, people always loathe. Almost love to loathe players. And this is kind of the opposite, where you loathe that you love them and you wish that you didn't, because you don't want to have to be caught by your friends praising something that you otherwise would rather talk shit about the entire time.
Do we want to get some listeners submitted ones, or do we want to give our list first?
Yeah, let's do our list first and just keep some sort of semblance of consistency between shows here. I need some sort of framework to get through this, and some regularity. Like, we're trying to set the baby down for naps at certain times so that we know we can get things done at certain times. It's what we have to do right now.
It is what we have to do. Let's get some continuity going. Let's get something stable in our life that's making sense. Okay. All right. I'll give my number 10.
Go for it.
It's my brother, David Silva.
Okay, for a minute, I thought you were going to name one of your actual brothers.
No. Josh supports Everton. I wouldn't say they're a team I hate, so mm-hmm. I guess I can't describe that. But no, my twin brother David Silva, he's grown his hair back, but who knows now? You know, he might have himself a coronavirus haircut, and he's back to the shaved head and the beard. But yeah, I had to put him in here. Oh, he's a big fan of him, I would say City is not a borderline hatred team, mm-hmm. Because for the majority of my, I would say for half at least of my fandom of European soccer, they were kind of a non-factor. So, yeah. You know, it was, there's just not that long stemming hatred.
Yeah, I get that. One, I'm intrigued to know that you aren't actually answering Chicharito for all 10 of your picks, like you said online. I thought this was going to be a cakewalk, and I was just going to look great because you were just going to say Chicharito 10 times over.
I mean, I'll say them at least one time. I can tell you that much.
All right, fair enough. I'm also mostly surprised that you're even able as a Chelsea fan to find anyone to hate. Do you guys even really have like a true rival?
You know, that is another thing. I guess there's, as far as like the club themselves, who their true rival is. I mean,
Fulham fan would like to think that it's you guys.
The other London clubs are rivals in a way. You know, they're true like in town, regional, you know, West London rivals are Fulham and QPR are the two closest neighbors. They are literal non-factors because they fail to make appearances in the Premier League for long stretches lately. So, you know, it's hard to foster that and keep that going when they're not even in the league. And yeah. The last time they were hot garbage.
Yeah. I'm going to admit my number 10 is also a Manchester City player. And I did feel a little like, I don't really even hate City. Like I'm annoyed by them, but I don't hate them. But I felt like I had to throw one in because they kind of ruined football, at least in English domestically, in a way that even Chelsea can't even say that they've ruined things. But I had Kevin De Bruyne on mine. Love him as a player. He's my favorite passer currently involved in the Premier League at the moment. He just sees things on a different level than most other, and his delivery is perfect. But I too felt a little like I felt like I was cheating by saying that I actually hate Man City.
Definitely. My number 9 is much like Chicharito, who again will make an appearance on this list. Just wait. Doubles it up by being on a national team rival in Mexico, and he spent a decent chunk of time at Arsenal. Carlos Vela.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Vela. I didn't really like him at Arsenal. I think that's a part of the reason for it. I didn't dislike him, but he just never really impressed me that much outside of having some promise to him. But I, too, also selected a Mexican player at number 9. Some similarities between our list. It's your boy, Chicharito. He showed up on my list, too. But not quite as high as I'm assuming you're going to have him ranked.
Substantially lower than how I had him.
Hopefully that's insulting.
My number 8, he has now played for 2 Premier League teams. One that I do not like, and then Manchester City, who they're a growing annoyance. Raheem Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these guys are on this list because they like genuinely seem like kind of a likable guy.
Yeah,
Sterling has almost a N'Golo Kante, just kind of very smiley, bubbly personality, where he just seems like he's just having fun out there.
Yeah,
I don't know. He just seems kind of like a likable guy. I like him.
I feel like that will be a not popular opinion.
It probably isn't. I tend to do that.
Yeah, that's fair.
I tend to like the unlikable. That's my vibe.
I've got a couple of those on my list. Also one at number 8. So the similarities continue on. This isn't the only MLS player that I threw into my list. As someone who kind of grew up a Crew fan, it's Chicago's supposedly our rival, and I'd be cheating if I said like some of my friends who played for that team, that I feel like that's a mega cheating. So I'm going to go actually to a team where there's kind of this old school rivalry with the Crew, and that's DC United. All the original teams kind of have these weird little built in rivalries because there were only like eight of them forever. And Ben Olsen is a guy who had this fiery kind of pit bully attitude. So many people hated him. And I love that about him. I love his tenacity.
He's completely different now. He's just none of those things, right?
No. And which is why I love him, is he's one of the best MLS coaches, if for no other reason that he shows emotion and personality. I feel like so many of these guys are really PR brushed in MLS. And, Ben has had the fire in his lips in the same way that he had the fire on the pitch. Ben deserves to get on the list, if nothing else.
I actually spent considerable time making this list, just focusing on like coming up with like some MLS ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it really kind of just hit me. I don't hate any MLS teams. Like, there's no MLS team that I just absolutely loathe. Seattle's like the closest, but like not really. It's really just more they have a contingency of knobby fans that's been in my crawl for a while.
Yeah, it's weird how that works.
The team is not unlikable.
Mm-hmm.
The team has never been unlikable. Not only are they not unlikable, I've always loved like their branding and their colors and a lot of their kits. Like I've always dug that. So like there is no MLS team that I hate.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a weird thing.
Yeah. And DC United, I don't really hate at all. In fact, they've got one of the best names in the league, originality wise, at least, from the first group. And then two, their kits have been kind of iconic throughout the years too. So yeah, again, I'm cheating a little bit, but I felt like I needed to sneak an MLS player in there.
So my number seven, again, going back to the Arsenal well, but like a guy that I've it's hard to not be a fan of Lord Bentner.
Oh, ugh. First, now we diverge. I can't even get on board with this.
He's just one of those guys that you're like, I don't know. A throwback is the right term, but it's just like, he shouldn't be as successful as he actually ends up being, right?
Well, I don't even know that we can class him as successful. He just, I'll concede that he provides entertainment value, but I certainly can't love Lord Bentner.
There's just something about him. There is something about him that's just like, this guy should absolutely suck. And he just, it doesn't suck just enough to make him super interesting.
Okay, you know, we said earlier that Breck Shea would be the only person we could see on Tiger King. I could totally see Bentner taking a sponsorship deal to wear their underwear during a game.
Some Tiger
King thongs.
And, like, he scores a goal and drops Trow.
Right?
Just show him off.
Yeah. All right, well, we've mixed that one back into it. And Bentner. The Arsenal well is deep. I'll be hitting that one a few times myself. But instead, we're going to first hit a string of actual Chelsea players for, you know, much as you.
Here we go.
But yeah, absolutely. Much as you love your Blues, you guys had a big, ugly I hate you target on your back for much of the late 2000s or, late 90s and early 2000s. You kind of pumped some extraordinary sums of money, at least at the time, into the game. And one of the guys that I have to have on there, current gaffer, Frank Lampard.
This is egregious.
I hate Chelsea at the core. Not really the team any longer, but how can you hate Frank?
He just cares about his business.
He seems proper. He's like the ideal English player in my mind. Like if you could mold the ideology of English players into it, like his demeanor, his, he's the gentleman on the pitch. You know what I mean?
He didn't
have some fire, but he's got that properness to him. The Belay is like what you would expect from the ideals of the game.
Yeah, and he kind of oozes that, like, he respects the game, he respects the players, he just kind of has that, yeah, that gentleman-like nature about him.
Yeah.
When it comes to how he interacts with the game, right?
Sure. Give me your number six.
My number six, apparently a player that Chelsea are currently kicking the tires on, is Coutinho.
Ooh.
I don't know if I'd say I'm a Barcelona hater, but not a club I really care for.
Yep.
Then also, you know, Liverpool. Not a fan.
Yeah, sure.
I've always really liked his style of play. I've always just kind of liked that Brazilian flair, if you want to give that. He's a player I've always liked. He has yet to play for a club that I have any ability to find joy in. And but hey, maybe he's heading our way, so who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see on that front. I have yet again another Chelsea player at number six, another midfielder in Chelsea's great sides of the early 2000s. Michael Essien, another guy who's just it's impossible to hate him. One, he's got the guy likes to nap so much. He falls asleep in between, you know, training sessions and, you know, a 5-minute bus ride. But also because he was just he covered so much ground. Like, I loved the way he would cover ground on both sides, both defensively and offensively. He seemed to be everywhere and wherever you need him to be, and was so multifaceted as a player. I love the guy so much, I named my dog after him. Like, it felt like the first betrayal as a soccer fan, right? Right. I actually took a name for a player from a team that I hated and applied it to something that I was expected to love.
That's awesome. Now, Essien is, he's a super lovable character. Mm-hmm. A great player, but also just, again, another one of those guys that just, like, this guy is just beams joy. Like, he just must be really fun to be around.
Yeah.
In the Champions League celebration, him and Ramirez, if you can watch in the footage, him and Ramirez were running around trying to pants each other the entire time.
Brilliant. That's brilliant. How do you not love that?
And Ramirez successfully does it on camera. Pants is Essien. I'm going to throw one back across the net to you here.
Yes.
I'm going to go with my one and only Spurs player on this list. And I think it's probably the one everyone, if they had to name one Spurs player that they love. And it's Him Ming-sung. And again, it's the same thing. The guy just seems so lovable.
He oozes personality.
Oh, my goodness. He just seems so fun and enjoyable. And then, like, also, he's just a really good player.
Yeah. It's a testament. He could go anywhere. He could go to Arsenal even, and I'd have a hard time hating him just because he just oozes positivity, and he's the type of guy who'll play on a broken arm for you for 94 minutes of a match, on top of being phenomenal and scoring goals in the same time. I totally get why you'd go there. My number five is a guy, again, he played for Chelsea, but I don't think of him as a Chelsea player. I will forever remember Cesc Fabregas as an Arsenal player. He rubbed some people the wrong way, but he was amazing to watch as he came onto the scene as a 16-year-old and really took the bull by the horns and looked like a player well beyond his years. And just was so fluid in the way he played, and he kind of embodied this whole Arsenal offensive strategy, the beautiful game that Arsene Wenger was trying to bring there, the English tiki-taka that he had going on. And I love the way he did that. He did have some cover from some really good midfielders, Vieira, Edu. He also had Henri ahead of him to ease the pressure. But one of the things I love best about Fabregas, and I promise the soccer side is really why I like him, And he's of course the first Arsenal player that I'm listing off here, and there will be a few. It's the fact that he threw pizza at Sir Alex Ferguson as a 17-year-old. Just imagine the balls you have to have on yourself to throw pizza at Sir Alex Ferguson.
I mean, I could see it though, because even at that young of age, he was touted as such the like next big thing.
Mm-hmm.
He probably did have a bit of air about him that was, he was probably fairly pumped up from his own news clippings there at the age of 17.
I mean, in a Nike commercial, he and his agent bought a helicopter. So, I mean, it was...
There you go.
That's enough for you there. Who you got number four?
Number four, one of two Manchester United players on here. Guess what one of those two is. I'm going to go with a guy from the first half of when I started watching soccer, early days, Roy Keane. Mm. Freaking love Roy Keane. He's just such a grumpy, just mean, just pit bull of a guy.
Yeah.
And you kind of need those guys out there.
You absolutely do. In fact, I have one of them on my list that played for the very same team. That is weird.
He's going to score a goal or he's going to punch somebody. Like,
and anything could happen in between, too.
Yeah.
I have my last Chelsea player on this list. And this is one where I don't even think about him like a Chelsea player. I love him from his time at Real Madrid. And he came to you guys and really started the renaissance that was the modern Chelsea. Claude Makélélé defines the defensive midfield position to this day. I was so excited when he came to the Premier League, and I didn't even really care that it was to Chelsea, a team I didn't particularly like. I was just really excited to get to watch him more regularly because it was so hard to watch La Liga here at the time. So I'm giving you guys this bone here because I feel like he's not even really yours. But the best two-way player I've ever seen play the game. Just a joy to watch. And a la Madrid, like it's more about them than it is about you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. My number three, there was a couple of these guys that I could have put on the list. But I felt it was cheating because they were at one time a Chelsea player.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of options there. Matic, Juan Mata. I mean, who doesn't love Juan Mata?
Your favorite account.
But I had to go with the one that made the least impact at Chelsea. And that, of course, is Mo Salah.
Yeah.
Love Mo Salah. Very brief Chelsea career, so I felt like it was the least egregious to put him on here. I mean, what's not to love about Mo Salah? He's a goal scoring machine. All points to be like a truly good person.
Yeah,
very good dude, well meaning dude.
I'm dipping back into the Arsenal well, and this is a beloved player, so I'm not the first person to go here. But he's not necessarily loved by the Spurs fan base, mostly because of how he speaks about us, both in the press and, you know, the way he's covered the game. Thierry Henry, it's impossible not to have marveled at the way that he played the game. He combined athleticism with a nose for goal, a penchant for the unbelievable. When Henry was at his best, he was a force of nature that was unstoppable. In the same way, the only really kind of striker I can compare to him, and their styles are nothing alike, but the way that you kind of felt like, oh my gosh, he's going to just run away with this thing. How do you not like watching this guy play, even though he's for your greatest rival? Is Ronaldo. He was like a tornado that you knew was going to wreck you and there was no escaping it. Surprisingly, I remember him being way more lethal than he was against Spurs. He only had 5 goals and 11 appearances against them, which I would have thought it was like easily double or triple that for both. I think
Marcus Alonso has that many against you guys.
God damn it, Alonso. I hate you. Not showing up on this list at all. But no, it's Henri just, he had this swagger, and part of the reason I dislike him as a player, or at least as a personality, is that that swagger applies negatively towards my club so often. But his ability level and how that swagger translated on the pitch is just unavoidable. And he's the modern complete striker, in my opinion. Can play back to goal, can take you on with pace and speed, at least at the beginning of his career. And it was fun to watch him do that. So Thierry Henry, number three on my list.
My number two, a player I always wanted to come to Chelsea. Didn't work out. We got some other players at that time instead that worked out a little better. I did think that when Mourinho came back to Chelsea, this was going to be someone he brought with him. Future DC United player, Mesut Ozil.
Yeah.
Again, another dude that seems like a very genuinely good person. He does so much as far as just giving money to, you know, paying medical bills for people, for poor people in Turkey and other places in Germany, and just seems like a really good dude, really good player. Yeah, I've just always been a fan of his.
I can totally see that one. Number two on my list is my only Manchester United entrant. And one that'll probably catch a few people off because he doesn't necessarily have the best rep. Paul Scholes. Loads of people love and respect him as a player. And, of course, I think that's part of the reason I kind of have him so high on my list. He is the ginger English Xavi. And he was getting those comparisons late in his career. But he was that type of metronome in the midfield that could completely dictate the flow and tempo of a match, bombing incredible crossfield passes to hitting inch perfect, laced passes on the ground and things along those lines. But he could also hit just a missile from distance at goal every once in a while also mixing in the, not exactly odd or rare, bone crunching tackle too. He's a prick, but he was the type of prick you respected because of his ability levels on the field. And I know a lot of people don't have much of a taste for Paul Scholes, at least personality wise, but I think it just made it a little bit more endearing.
Not bad. Not bad. Love it. My number one is, I don't know if you knew this.
Landon Donovan.
Yep. Landon Donovan. really not a fan of the Galaxy or the Earthquake. It's Chicharito. Yeah. Again, double dips as he's both a rival with the Mexican national team. And also he played some of his more formidable years, his better years, his more notable years of his pro career with Manchester United, was always just one to score a goal against Chelsea. Like I didn't get a chance to pull it up, but his numbers against Chelsea, pretty good. I mean, we're talking about even times when he didn't even start the match, he would still find himself a goal.
Yeah. Chicharito so lethal off the bench. Never really has punished the U.S. on a tremendous scale. You know, it's one of those things where you always feared what he was capable of, and not that he didn't net against us a few times, but he didn't necessarily unleash, a torrent of goals. And maybe it's a bit of a thing that it's down to he's kind of one of those guys that needs proper service in order for him to be at his best, and he didn't always have that at Mexico. But no, I understand your long love affair with the little P, and I'm not shocked at all to see him at number one.
I'm actually probably the only person in Cincinnati that's bummed out that the Galaxies did a home game with us last year when Zlatan was around. I would have preferred this year with Chicharito around.
Yeah.
I got to be the only person that wanted that scenario to be flipped.
That's that's probably not untrue. Number one on my list, this belays my age and when I first started really watching the Premier League, but Dennis Bergkamp, just incredibly likable, a humble player at that, but no player has the vision and the creativity. I shouldn't say no, there were plenty of players that did, but he was the one that kind of just changed the game in the way that I thought about it because of the level at which he was able to pull off innovative and different ideas. The one thing that always sticks out in my mind, but it's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Bergkamp, is that turn and finish that he had against Newcastle, where he flicked it one way, ran around the other, and then coolly slotted it home. It's you know, considered the greatest goal in Premier League history. And I just the guy is so innocent that he refuses to fly because he has a fear of flying. So I mean, that's just it speaks a little bit to the type of guy that he was.
Man.
You wouldn't even be upset when he would put the nail in your coffin.
The John Madden of European soccer that doesn't want to.
A good way of putting it.
Yeah. So a lot of likable guys on detestable teams. Those are ours. We did have some listeners send some stuff in. What we got?
Yeah. So we'll start with Jason Ridge. He spent all afternoon thinking about it, and he was only able to come up with two. One you had on your list, Carlos Vela, not just for Mexico.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, I know. I felt like this was cheating for him, and I'm glad you brought this up. Jason is a diehard Arsenal fan. He basically picked a guy that played for his own team. So he did specify that it was when he was playing for Mexico, though. So
okay. Just then.
Otherwise, it's literally a player on your own team, Jason, you cheat. The other one is one that pleases me greatly. Dimitar Berbatov, when he was with Spurs. Of course, spent a stint at United, who I'm sure Arsenal fans don't love either. Can't hate on him simply because he's so silky, and that's the perfect way of describing Berbatov. We'll then leave Cincinnati before coming back to get one last opinion from there. Fletcher up in Detroit, he says, I don't hate him, but again, someone else on Jeremy's list, you guys have similar sensibilities given your Chelsea fans. Heung-Min Son showing up on that list.
He's got to be on a lot of people's lists.
Yeah. To be fair, Fletcher also listed out Sadio Mane.
He almost made my list, actually.
Yeah.
I like Mane. Again, like most of Liverpool's squad right now, overall fairly likable.
Yeah, that's true. And then we'll come back to Cincinnati for our last one. Our good friend Tana Weingartner, she threw up some women's names. This won't surprise you at all. Christine Sinclair, though she admits it's pretty hard to throw hate, is a strong word for anyone from the Canadian women's national team.
Does anybody hate Canada or anything from Canada? Sure. Like you feel guilty throwing any kind of actual legit hate towards them, right?
sometimes our leader has some words for Justin Trudeau, which seems just absurd.
I mean, that guy kind of does suck on some levels. He just seems too douchey for my taste, but I like his peppery beard he's got going right now.
COVID beard.
Peppery quarantine beard. I love it.
Yeah, everyone's trying to grow them or cut all their hair off or somewhere in between. A couple more that she had here. Lisa DeVanna, Jess Fishlock, Olivier Giroud. She did throw out a couple men's players. And then Guillermo Ochoa from the Mexico ranks as well. She says, I'm too lazy to think up five more, but Tana, you actually provided more than everyone else. So, way to go. That brings us to the end of this week's show, right around the hour mark. So you're welcome, that we didn't leave you with us rambling on for another couple hours. Although if that's something you need to put you to sleep right now, your mid afternoon nap.
23 more hours to kill, and it's another day gone.
That's right. That's right. Stay safe out there, everyone. While you're washing your hands, you can think of a question to send our way, I guess.
That'll take
20 seconds.
What should be our next list?
Yeah, we need some suggestions. We've run out of ideas now in week three because our brains have become piles of mush. Tweet them at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. You can also tweet them at me at Wrong Side of Pond. Thanks for listening, as always.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned washing hands and stuff like that. Have you gotten to the point where you're washing your hands and sanitizing them so much that they're now like dry and cracking?
Yeah. Our lotion consumption has skyrocketed in this house as well.
Yeah, same too. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't just me, that I was having some kind of weird problem here.
If this is you needing some medical advice, don't go to Skype with me. Just call 911. They won't let you come to the hospital. But
they won't.
They'll tell you.
Amazon Prime me some lotion.
Ooh, perfect. Perfect. We'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, folks. Bye. Not one minute.